Hello and welcome to episode number 107 of Chell Squared. I'm your host, Andrew Chelney, and a great conversation heading your way today. Real quick housekeeping first, and then we'll get right into it. At Chell Squared and at Chelney Andrew, C-H-E-L-N-E-Y Andrew on Twitter, at Chell Squared on Facebook. Give the show that illustrious five-star review on Apple Podcasts and support the work that goes into this by going to Chell Squared shop.bigcartel.com for the sickest t-shirt in the game to become a true Chell Razor. I'm the only person actively working on the show, and any support at all is greatly appreciated. Chell Squared is a part of the Bruins Die Hard Network. Their network includes, of course, the Bruins Die Hards podcast and the fantastic Pride Die Hards podcast, the official partnered podcast with the NWHL's Boston Pride. Though I am a full-time associate producer at SiriusXM, this podcast is not affiliated with the company in any way. The opinions expressed in this podcast are mine and mine alone and may or may not reflect the views of SiriusXM. We've got Jude Hull joining the show coming up in the second half, but right now, I'm saying hello to former NHLer and current Tampa Bay Lightning analyst Brian Engblom. Brian, what's up? Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me. It's been fun watching the playoffs in such extraordinary circumstances, and we're coming down to the end of it now, and the tension is really building.
Well, thank you for giving me some of your time, Brian. And the Lightning are one win away from winning the Stanley Cup. They can win it tonight, back-to-back. I mean, I'll ask you about that here in a second, but especially after what happened last season, how special is this for the Lightning organization?
Well, anytime you get to the Stanley Cup Finals, it's pretty special. The organization has won it once and been to the finals one other time and lost. So that pretty much speaks for itself. After what happened last year, tying the record for most wins in the history of the NHL and then losing in four straight games in the playoffs, that became part of the team's DNA too, and all the individual players that were on the team last year. So the core that's been there last year and most of them, or a lot of them at least, going all the way back to 2015, the last time they went to the finals and lost the Chicago Blackhawks, and everything in between, a couple of other losses and conference finals, all that together is what's made this team what they are this year. Experienced, hardened, knowledgeable, and really focused and understanding of what it takes in order to win. So to rebound from last year and have it take as long as it has. So if you think back to going out four straight last year in April and then having to wait a full season and then going through the COVID situation and the pause in March and not even having a chance to get back on track in April, having to wait all the way until now, I mean, it's been, I think, excruciating for them to have to wait a year and a half plus in order to redeem themselves from last year. Just extraordinary circumstances all the way around.
Back to back in a Stanley Cup final. Now, I get it. The NHL is putting in a lot of money, and it's very expensive to obtain, to maintain a bubble every day. But back to back in a Stanley Cup final, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, is this not a big deal at all? Or are we kind of thinking too much about this? Because I can't remember the last time there was a back-to-back in a Stanley Cup final series.
I believe the last time was 2009. So it is extremely extraordinary. I believe that was Pittsburgh and Detroit. They do it on purpose, not to have back-to-back. But this is so extraordinary. And yes, they do really want to get this over with, you know, as quickly as possible. I'm sure the coaches and players certainly now want to. I mean, you're talking about 65 days, I think it is, in bubbles away from your family and everything. Incredible to try and even comprehend. I don't even know what that's like. So back-to-backs are something that players face all the time. This is an extraordinary situation because what's on the line. But at the same time, I think considering all the other circumstances, the players just go with it. They know how to train themselves. They know how to recover and and, you know, made the best team win coming into this game tonight. Obviously, the pressure is on Dallas. They have to win. So, you know, you can expect that there will be, you know, a big push early on. And then a lot of it will be certainly training and patience, as much as you can do that. But also at the same time, conditioning is going to be a huge factor, both emotionally, psychologically, and physically, because this has been a really physical pounding series. And last night's game was no different, over 100 total hits in the game. So some guys are going to run out of gas. And what will that mean for the outcome?
We're talking to Brian Engblom, former NHLer and current analyst with the Lightning. Brian, I work in basketball. I mean, and I've been around hockey for a long time, and you've been in hockey for forever as well. And there's been this conversation surrounding this season, and be it basketball, hockey, whichever sport is in a bubble right now, the idea of this championship having an asterisk next to it, and the idea of, well, this one is different than all the other ones. Sure, because, well, we're in a bubble compared to all the other ones that weren't in a bubble. But in your opinion, is there an asterisk next to this championship, or does this one maybe count more so than the other ones because of the extraordinary situation?
Well, what you just said, people are going to put an asterisk beside it for one reason or the other, because it is extraordinary. I'm sure people are going to remember it as the COVID Cup for sure. But how can you not? It's like nothing we've ever seen before. No circumstances like this ever. If you're asking, is it tougher than others? I don't know how to answer that. Psychologically, emotionally, I think yes, because there has been nothing like it. And being isolated literally from the family, fans, everything, I can't speak to exactly what that means, only from observation, because I haven't been in the bubble. But that is a huge psychological factor. People will give you different opinions. On the other side of it, there's no travel. And travel is big. Like the one time that the Tampa Bay Lightning won the Stanley Cup was 2004. Dave Andrechuk was captain of that team. I was talking to him this morning, and they played Calgary. Calgary to Tampa travel is no joke. It's no joke. It's a big difference. So there's no travel in the bubble. They're in the same place monotonously, walking from the hotel to the arena. So you take away the travel. So you can argue it any way you want. It's just totally unique. So put anything beside it any way you want. It doesn't really matter. There have been Stanley Cups won during wartime situations where teams were missing major players from their team because they'd gone to war. This is a championship that goes back to the early 1900s. So you've got a lot of different circumstances. But this one, again, is totally unique to any of those.
For sure. And going to the on-ice product here, we're heading into game two. The Lightning were 0-14 on the power play in their last four games. And they scored two big ones on the man advantage in the first period, add another one, and then they hold on to win that game. And they have scored a power play goal in games three and four. They scored three power play goals in game four as well. Take me through the adjustments you saw from this team that kind of let them they found their groove on the power play after it was missing the previous couple of games. What kind of adjustments did you see out there?
Yeah, it's funny. Power plays and penalty kills, but particularly power plays, are easy to point the finger at. And yeah, they were 0-15. So things were ugly and they were still winning. So they relied on their 5-on-5 play, or they never would have made it to the finals. And now they're 6-15 in the Stanley Cup finals. 6-15, that's damn good in any situation. In October, that's great. So a lot of times you're going to see that power plays are cyclical for whatever reasons. The numbers just prove that out. The biggest key is, yeah, you have to make subtle changes, and certainly you're going to get different people on it. But when you're playing in a series, you have to show different looks because you're playing the same people every night. So if you keep doing the same thing night after night, they're going to have answers for you. They're going to make adjustments on their penalty kill. You can't show them the same look. You have to move it around, and that is something I think they've done really well. But at the same time, the basis of what makes your power play go is guys like Nikita Kucherov. They want to get Kucherov the puck as quickly as possible. Everybody knows it. Dallas knows it. The Lightning know it because he's their most talented player and best playmaker. So it and a lot of what happens on power plays is about it's a cyclical thing. There are movements that happen. There are passes that are made to set up a certain play. And that is what makes a difference. And if you can't get those sequences going down in a nice formation, a nice order and smooth tape to tape, it's really hard to get those really good looks that you want. Now, it's possible to overpass. That's happened a little bit at times. They had a horrible problem for several games in a row where they couldn't get in the zone. And obviously, if you can't get in the zone, how the heck are you going to get in your formation and try to set up? That is one of the biggest problems for any power play, is getting the puck in the zone as quickly as possible and getting set up. So you had to, give the opposition a lot of credit for that in disrupting that. But I think, Kucherov, I thought Killorn down low beside the net, walking out from the net, showing a different look, putting pressure on the goaltender and the defense, and then sometimes taking it and going around behind the net and passing it around to the other side, shifting that box from side to side is what it's all about in order to get chances. But then when you have Kucherov, who can make plays, a point in front of the net, who pulls the trigger, that was, a couple of games ago, and then point scored on the power play again, knocking it out of the air, but that was because of Killorn moving behind the net and giving a different look. So they have been patient about trying different things and just waiting for all the tumblers to fall into place. They've got a lot of skilled guys, and they know eventually they're going to score some goals, and they have.
Speaking of things that are cyclical, Steven Stamkos into the lineup, and he scores a goal. Well, who would have guessed? Steven Stamkos coming back after a seven-month absence. He's dealing with a lot of injuries. Comes back, he plays under 3 minutes, just 2 minutes and 47 seconds. Only five shifts, but he scores a goal. First game and goal, as I mentioned, in 7 months. What did his presence, and especially that goal, bring to the Lightning bench?
Some players just have that it thing. They're special. And Stammer's one of those guys. That pretty much a movie script there. Third shift out on the ice. Makes a great move down the wall, and the angle that he scored from, being a right-hand shot on the right wing, he was below the face-off dot. You don't get much of a look at the net from there, and he put it up underneath the crossbar, inside the post, in a probably about a 4-inch by 4-inch spot, which was the perfect shot. It's just so Steven, because he is very much a precision shooter. With that wrist shot. He's got a great one-timer, which he's known for, and everybody was waiting for him to do his damage on the power play. Well, it was exactly the opposite. It was on a fourth-line shift on the rush from the right-wing side, not the left-wing side, where he makes his living with the one-timer on the power play. But he just has that presence and the ability to only need a chance or two in order to make a difference. Just being in the lineup, if you watched on television, you watched them come out of the room, you could see the energy on television as he walked through his teammates just to lead them out for the warm-up. Everything was different. The air changed. The energy level changed. And it changed things for the Dallas Stars, because going into the game, they didn't know he was only going to play 2 minutes and 47 seconds. But he still ended up hurting them. And when you have a guy of that caliber, you have to recognize his presence out there. And so that changes things for everybody else out there. And Steven did his damage early, and the boost that it gave to the team was something there's no money that can cover it. And it just lifted them to a whole nother level. Quite extraordinary.
And he didn't play in game 4 last night. He's not going to play in game 5 tonight, but it could be argued that that the damage has already been done. He, as we talked about, scored the goal in game number 3. Yeah. Huge, huge presence for the Tampa Bay Lightning on the ice, even though he didn't play a whole lot. And of course, off the ice, rallying his team behind him. And in game 4 last night, this question kind of doesn't need an introduction, because, I mean, you know it. We all saw what happened. 29 seconds left to go in regulation time. Score's tied at 4. Two penalties get, well, I'll say two penalties get called. One of which was a call. The other one, we could discuss that one. Your thoughts on the Corey Perry spear and, of course, Brayden Point's quote-unquote embellishment?
Yeah, I don't think many people agreed with that call. I know I didn't. We didn't. Corey Perry's stick was right up in his crotch, and that'll drop you down pretty quick. So whatever the referee saw, I don't know how he didn't see the stick, but you're going to go down pretty quickly there. And it certainly was a call that nobody expected. When the arm went up, I think we were all expecting Corey Perry to be called on a hooking call, and he wasn't. So that one was a big blow. But the Lightning, they killed off the penalty, and it was at a crucial time. It went into the overtime. There was a 3-on-4, which became a 4-on-5 because Sergachev, I think it was, got a penalty as well. So it was really dicey, to say the least. And that penalty-killing sequence was a major contributor to the Lightning winning the game.
Was the Jamie Benn call in overtime a makeup call? Because that was still probably a penalty. I don't know if you'd call that in overtime of a Stanley Cup final series, but was that maybe a makeup call, you think?
Not a chance. It was a flat out penalty. Absolutely. Jamie Benn's left arm is drained down and across Tyler Johnson's chest. Would have been holding right there. So they called it, tripping? He also uses the upper part of his left leg to in behind Tyler's legs. So the leverage action on a big guy who's extremely strong, and Tyler Johnson goes down. So he leveraged them down. Call it holding, call it tripping. I don't care what you call it, but absolutely, positively, it was a penalty. No doubt.
Brian, this is why I have you on, Brian, because like this is the type of analysis that. I never played in the NHL. I haven't been an analyst for the Lightning. This is why I asked you to come on. I appreciate you giving it to me. And Game 5, we got Game 5 coming up in a few hours here, as we mentioned, back-to-back. The Stars are going to come out. Obviously, they're upset that they lost in Game 4 the way that they did. How do the Lightning, what do they have to do to keep the Stars at bay and not coming out full force like they probably will?
Well, I know, first of all, I know, the Stars fans and whatever, and I know Eddie Olchuk did the replay on it and said it was not a penalty because he said he saw the referee make a sweeping motion with his foot like he had slew-footed him. Well, he's explaining to Jamie Benn, that's why I'm calling you on it, right? So he didn't use his foot to kick out the feet of Tyler Johnson, but absolutely, he leveraged his leg and did a different variation of it. So it was still a slew-foot. Or on top of it, like I said, could have just been plain old holding with his arm across in front of him. You watch it in regular speed, watch it in slow motion, and you'll see all those actions. So I know that influenced a lot of people. And of course, anybody on the Stars team, you never want to see penalties on your own guy. Well, the Lightning didn't like the call on Brayden Point either, which we already talked about. They killed that penalty and the Stars didn't. So it comes down to that in the long run anyway. So the Stars have to put that out of their mind because obviously they have to win this game. I think the start would look very similar to last game and probably most of the games. I thought last game had a tremendous tempo to it right off the bat. A lot of energy from both teams, and that's why you had a lot of momentum swings. Sometimes the Stars were dominant. Sometimes the Lightning were dominant. 9 goals are scored, and that was entertaining for everybody. So the Stars can't sit back. They're going to have to go after it. And Rick Bonus is going to be saying that. I don't think there's any doubt about that. So that's what I expect is the Lightning certainly are going to have to match that. They're going to try and set the tone and make sure that the Stars don't, just start to try to run over them early on. So I expect right from the drop of the puck that these two teams are really going to go at it.
One last question for you, Brian. Really appreciate your time today. If the Lightning win tonight and you had the final decision on this choice, who is your Conn Smythe winner?
I would go with what most people I think are saying is Victor Hedman. I think Victor has been brilliant. His The point totals, and particularly the 10 goals, really speak for itself. I mean, it's when he has scored the goals and the importance of the goals in each individual game. But so that speaks for itself. And that, I think, is an overriding factor. But the way he plays the game everywhere, and the shifts that he takes, the amount of ice time that he gets against the top people on the other team in all four series, and the way that he can dominate shifts and he's dominated games. The way he plays defense is the way the game is played now. It's not the old traditional skate forwards up and skate backwards back. He's swooping around all over the place. And because of his speed up the ice to join the rush and be a big part of it, you know, he still has the speed and momentum to get back and make great defensive plays and cover up for where he was in the first place, you know, in his position as a defenseman. So the great players in the past have all done that. You can go back to Bobby Orr, to Paul Coffey, to Brian Leetch, to Scott Niedermeyer, players who all had great wheels, great offensive talent, and ability to dominate all three zones in the ice. That's the way Victor has played, and that's the way the game demands top players to play now. So I think all those factors, Victor's defensive prowess, I think, sometimes gets overlooked, but he has an intuitive feel for the game and what he is able to do, and it's really pretty incredible to watch.
Isn't it crazy how the Lightning, there's four potential Conn Smythe winners on this team. I mean, how much fun is it? You got Kucherov, potential winner, Brayan Point, who's been phenomenal, especially in that movie Game 4. I mean, you can find Hudobin's jockstrap somewhere in the stands. I mean, that was insane. You got Victor Hedman, who you said, you got Vasilevsky in net. You got four potential winners playing for this team. I mean, this has got to be a really, really fun team to watch if you're a Lightning fan.
Well, they have some extraordinary talent, that's for sure, and you've seen that. But it's been really interesting to listen to the talk shows and the media now throughout these playoffs, especially in the conference finals and finals, where it really gets everybody's attention. And a lot of people they still classify and speak about the Lightning in the same way they did last year. And they are not the same team as they were last year. They are not. And that's why they're in the finals. And it's why they lost last year, because right from training camp, John Cooper came out and said it publicly, we are not playing like we did last year. They won 62 games. He said, we're not playing like last year, because they lost and they couldn't play that game in the finals. The way you play in the regular season shows what the possibilities, what your capabilities are. But if that's the only way you're going to play, there's no better example than how badly they lost last year, because their game got taken away and they had no plan B. You have to beat the other team in the playoffs. During the regular season, it's great. Let's get our game together. Let's play our game. Great, because you're home. Then you're in Chicago. Then you go to Columbus. Then you're home to LA. So you have to play a style for sure that shows your capabilities. When the playoffs come around, if you can't shut the game down and you can't play defense, which they proved they couldn't do last year. They proved it the year before when they lost to the Washington Capitals in the conference finals. They weren't good enough yet. All those things, all those sequences were part of why they are winning now, because they can play defense. You know what their record is in one goal games in these playoffs? 12-2. 12-2 in one goal games, because they can go out against anybody, all four rounds, any four of those teams. And at any time in the game, they can say to the opposition, we're fine. It's even the score. It's a one-goal game. We're okay. Are you? Last year, they couldn't say that. This year, they say it every game, and they're 12-2 in one-goal games. That is a big difference.
Right, you just gave me my social media quote. Like this is it. I'm gonna cut this audio, put it on social. Like this is it. You gift wrapped it for me. This is fantastic. I'll put it on Twitter, put it on Facebook, put it everywhere. Brian Engblom, former NHLer. You got the Lightning analyst here. The game five is in like what, 4.5 hours. We are inching closer and closer, potentially, to seeing the Lightning raise the Stanley Cup above their heads. Brian, really appreciate your time today.
Anytime. This is what we wait for, right? The Stanley Cup Finals and down to the last couple of games. It's not over yet, but they're certainly getting close to it. And the excitement level here in Tampa Bay is certainly palpable, and we're all looking forward to the game tonight.
Big thanks to Brian Engblom for hopping on the podcast to talk Lightning. Flipping over to the Dallas perspective, joining me to talk Stars is Jude Hull. Jude, what's up, man? Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Andrew. Thanks for having me on.
I appreciate you giving me some of your time, man. And Jude, as I'm sure you know, being a Stars fan, the Lightning are one win away from winning the Stanley Cup, and they can do it in just a few hours from now. What do the Stars have to do to make sure that doesn't happen tonight and force a Game 6?
I would say it's less the team, and I would say it's more individuals. I think Tyler Seguin needs to score a goal. He's making $9 million. He's got 8 goals in these playoffs, or 8 points in these playoffs, maybe 9 now after last night. But they're paying him to score goals, and he's on a 12 or 13 game goal drought, and that's just not the recipe for a Stanley Cup championship team.
Is it more of something that he's doing, or he's just not getting the bounces? Is he gripping the stick a little bit too tight? Like, what have you seen in Seguin's game that has kind of led him to this goal drought?
I would say it's a big combination of everything you just said. I think he's definitely putting himself in the right spots. Like, in the last couple of games, he's had great looks. But I think it like, realistically, it goes down to him just not being that guy. I think, and I've said this for a while now, I think Tyler Seguin is not the goal scorer that the NHL hypes him up to be. I think he's turned into a great defensive center after Hitchcock came to Dallas. But I think the scoring, I just never really saw it. I think him and Jamie Benn clicked really well right when he came to Dallas. But the things that I watched, his zone entries, just his decision-making with the shots that he takes, I just don't really, you don't see the Stamkoses and Ovechkins and the Pasternaks. They're getting these opportunities, and just I don't see that coming from Tyler Seguin.
So, well, and I'll mention his name again in a second here, but Corey Perry has got more goals in these playoffs than Tyler Seguin. Tyler Seguin has 2 goals. Corey Perry has 3. Radek Foxa has 3. Joel Kiryvanta, the champion of a game last series, he's got 5. Yep. And Tyler Seguin has got 2 goals and 8 assists, 10 points in 24 games. I mean, it's hard to argue when you look at it, when you look at the cold hard facts here.
Yeah, and so, realistically, I think if he scores a goal, I think that will have the same impact on Dallas and their bench that Tampa Bay's 91 scored for them. I think him scoring the goal will just have that team so fired up, and it'll be a huge, like, obviously a huge weight off his shoulders. He's notorious for going on these dry spells, and then once he breaks through, he scores in bunches. Now, unfortunately, this dry spell is still occurring. Game 5 now in the Stanley Cup Finals, but I really do believe if he scores a goal, that I think Dallas wins the game.
Tampa was 3-for-4 on the power play last night. The Stars were 0-for-3. The Stars are just 1-of-15 on the power play in this series. What have you seen from Dallas on the man advantage, and why they just haven't been able to break through and put the puck in the back of the net?
Well, it's a ton of their power play forever has frustrated me. They've had guys where they shouldn't be. They've had, like, Joel Pavelski, for example, he's one of the greatest high guys are getting high tips on the power play, and they've had him running the power play for the most of the regular season, and then in times during these playoffs. They have Tyler Seguin kind of rotating, but he's more down low on his side now instead of wanting that one timer like Ovechkin. And I think that also has to do with them realizing he's like that shot isn't when he gets it off, it's great, but he doesn't get it off enough. But I think a lot has to do with the team. It's so stationary. If you watch Tampa Bay, you have Braden Point and Kucherov. They wheel around the zone, right? They make you have to be aware of where they are the entire time. Instead of Sagan, Ben, Radulov, they just stand there, right? And I think that's what I've noticed the most. It's an ineffective power play, and for some reason they haven't really changed anything. Personnel's kind of changed here and there, but what I see having that power play breakthrough is obviously, I think, all that comes through Klingberg getting those shots through, and then I think a lot of more movement coming from the other guys. Will hopefully see a little bit more success come from them.
Is this more of a play call situation where the system just isn't working, or is this more of a personnel problem, maybe a combination of both? Like, how would you fix the power play on the Dallas Stars?
Yeah, I totally think it's not the correct system to run. I think they don't utilize the guys in the right way, and it's just a kind of a conundrum. Like, they have so many talented, offensively gifted guys. And for that power play unit to be 1-for-15 in the series, I'm not putting it on the players. I think it's bad. It's a bad system that Bonus is implementing for them to succeed with.
I asked Brian about this, and now I want your opinion on it as well. You got 29 seconds left in regulation last night. We were texting about it as we were watching it happen in real time. Tied at 4. Two penalties get called. Well, one, maybe not so much. Maybe put one of these in air quotes. But your thoughts on the Corey Perry spear and the embellishment call on Brain Point?
I think it's Corey Perry antics, right? You kind of know what you're getting with him, and you're going to like him on your team, and you're going to absolutely hate him if he's not on your team, right? Obviously, that was a penalty. Like, Corey Perry sticking his stick up a Point's legs is not exactly in the rule book for legal plays. But I did. I also agreed with the dive. I think he embellished his reaction to the stick up there. So I didn't hate the call. I really disliked the call on Jamie Benn, which could have been another embellishment by Tyler Johnson too. But obviously, I've seen a lot of tweets where they're saying it was pretty much impossible to not call that a trip, which that's fine. You know, it's the refs are there; they're calling what they're seeing, and you can't really. It's hard. The refs are in such a tough position; they have such a hard job, and no one's going to be happy all the time.
Brian said that the Jamie Benn overtime penalty was 100% the right call. I'm assuming you're not in total agreement of that.
Well, I think if he thinks that's the right call, it's fine. And I'm sure a lot of people do. But I think you have to call Tyler Johnson flopping then, too. If you're going to call Braden Point for the exact same thing, right? I think it was a bigger Jamie Benn tying up with Tyler Johnson. And more often than not, the bigger guy is going to get that call on him, which is kind of standard in just hockey in general. The bigger guy is always going to get the penalty when colliding with the smaller guy. But I don't know. I'm not one of those guys that's just going to just hold a grudge over that play for the rest of my life. It happened, and they're down 3-1. So the Stars had an opportunity to score beginning of the overtime period. They didn't, and Tampa did. So that's the difference.
Fair enough. And throughout this entire playoff run, Ben Bishop was not healthy enough to play. We talked about it in a couple of games that he tried to play in. That man just wasn't healthy. He still isn't healthy. Anton Khudobin stepped in. Nobody really gave him a shot. Nobody gave the Stars a shot. And he came in, and he pretty much has dominated every single game that he's played in. Talk to me about his play and what he has given the Dallas Stars team during this run.
Dobby's been great. Dobby's one of those guys that everyone wants him on their team. Like, he can just tell all the guys love him. They play for him. They want him to be successful. And when he's successful, the team's successful. He's coming off as a surprise to a lot of people, but he's been like the best backup goalie since he's been in the league. Like, he's a career, like 930 save percentage, maybe a little worse, but like, I don't think he's coming as a surprise to anyone, within that locker room and that organization. But I do think there is my biggest thing coming into the finals was that was going to be the biggest difference, was Khudobin versus Vasilevsky. It's not really an even matchup. And, I think he's running out of, gas in the tank. He looked a little sloppier. Rebounds were he was a little less in control with his rebounds. He's been great all playoffs with his rebound control. That's been a talking point every intermission. And I saw a tweet that he's like, from inside sources, he's fatigued. And I think if they had anyone other than Ottinger backing up, I don't think he plays tonight.
Do the Stars just not trust Ottinger in this position? Is it more of just what is it about Ottinger that the Stars are just deciding, hey, he's not ready to play in Game 5?
I think it's less that. Well, I don't think there's a soul on earth that's going to say he's ready to play in Stanley Cup Finals in an elimination game. But I think it's more Dobby got us there, so they want, like, it's his Stanley Cup to win or lose. I think that's more of it than anything else.
He's going to be a UFA at the end of this season, maybe at the end of this game, maybe at the end of next week. What do you see in Dobby's future? Is he going to come back, do you think, in Dallas? Is he going to find a nice raise for himself somewhere else? What do you see for the future of Anton Khudobin?
You know what? I do not know. I don't know what their thoughts are with Ben Bishop now. This is his every single season. It seems he gets hurt at inopportune times, and because of that, he hurts the team with his lack of presence on the ice. Right. So I think it comes down to what they do with Bish first, and then obviously after this run, I would assume they'd have the loyalty to try and re-sign him. But like you said, he's going to be wanting a little more money, and he's earned it. So I don't know. I hope he signs. I've loved his play for the Stars in the, I think, 3 years he's been there. So, but we will see.
I'm a big fan of his Instagram as well. He posts some good stuff on there. If this is it for Dallas, what changes do they have to make, if any, to make a return trip to the final next season?
So my thoughts are a little more radical than I think everyone else, but I really think they need to get rid of Bishop and Sagan. I think Sagan is is a waste of money. At this point, you're seeing it right in front of your eyes. Everyone's thought it's Tyler Sagan over Jamie Benn. But I think that's like a general consensus. Everyone talks about Sagan. Ben's almost a point per game guy in the playoffs. Sagan has 10 points in 25 games. Like he's taking up $9.25 million in that salary cap, and he is not producing to that level where he needs to be. And I think his play offensively has gone down every single season, and same with Jamie Benn, but Jamie Benn's the captain, and he's not going anywhere. So I think Tyler Sagan, this is kind of what I've been talking myself into, which is never going to happen, but I would love a William Nylander, Frederick Anderson trade for Bishop and Sagan. It won't happen, obviously, but I would love a little more offensively minded younger guy with Ben and Radulov. But I think those two guys, Bishop and Sagan, I don't see them leaving, but that would be my desired roster changes. And then I don't think Corey Perry comes back. So I think you got to get you just got to get those pieces back that you're going to lose next season. But I think if Gurianov produces like he did in these playoffs and the regular season. If Rupe can finally find a little consistency, Joel Kiviranta now is, he's kind of cemented himself into the roster next year. I think this is a good young group with a lot of older guys that hopefully will either not be re-signed or re-sign and be a little more productive in the regular season. But yeah, I don't think a whole lot needs to change.
It would be very Toronto if they traded for Tyler Seguin and paid him $9 million to be their third line center. I feel like that would be peak Toronto.
I could not agree more. That's why I don't think it won't happen. But those are just my thoughts. Obviously, these playoffs haven't exactly gotten me back on the Tyler Seguin bandwagon.
No, for sure. And we got game five coming up in a couple hours here. If the Lightning do win tonight and you had the authority to pick, who would be your Conn Smythe winner?
That's why I wasn't paying too much attention to Tampa during the early rounds. But everything I've read, all the statistics, Mike Kelly is one of my favorite Twitter accounts to follow, and he's got me convinced that Victor Hedman should win it. So I'm gonna say Victor Hedman. But I also think Vasilevsky's a sneaky, like, he, no one's gonna talk about him, but he definitely deserves some votes for Conn Smythe.
Brian Engblom agrees with Mike Kelly because he also said Victor Hedman. I'm talking to Jude Hull here, and the man, the myth, the legend himself, the Dallas Stars fan who is not very pleased right now. We got game five coming up in a couple hours. Let's say the Stars come back, they win game five, they win game six, and they win game seven. Are you giving the Conn Smythe to Hudobin, maybe Miro Heiskanen, John Klingberg, maybe? Who is your pick for Conn Smythe if the Stars win?
Dolby, for sure. I think Miro was superb in the first three rounds. Tampa's made him look very, very human these past four games now. The backhand pass to Kucherov to spring him on a breakaway in game three was so uncharacteristic of him, and I haven't really seen a whole lot of his superhuman play that he was showing in the first couple of rounds. I don't think he can give it to Ben just because he hasn't been the guy. Just like Sagan, he hasn't really shown up in these in the big games. The big games, all the big goals have come from like Kiviranta, Gurianov, Pavelski. So that would remove those two out of contention. But Dolby for sure. Dolby's he's the star of the Stars right now. And like I said, it's his Stanley Cup to win or lose.
We got game five coming up in a couple hours. I mean, and we talked about it before we hit record. You mentioned a stat here. What was it like the last team to win coming down 3-1 in the cup final was what, in the 40s or something, right?
Yeah, 1942 was the last team to win, come back from a 3-1 deficit in the finals. So if there's a team to do it, I think this Dallas Stars team has gone through so much this whole season with the firing of Montgomery, them starting 1-11-1 or whatever it was, to then having the most points in the NHL for 30 plus games. Then the reset happens, and just them playing in the round robin games, looking like they should be dead last in the standings, to then upsetting everyone pretty much, not being a money line underdog since every game, I believe, since game six of Calgary. This team has proved so much to, I think, the world that they're legit. They're a team. Like, they love playing for one another. And I think if there's one team to do it, it's this team. But 1942 is a long time ago, and so I'm cautiously optimistic.
Well, if there's ever a time to do it, right? I mean, we're in a bubble. It's been a long time. If there's ever a time to break a long record, well, maybe this is it, right?
Yep, exactly.
And we got game five at 8 p.m. tonight Eastern time. That is, what, 3.5 hours away? That's going to be, if you're not watching this game, then I don't know what you're doing. But Jude, really appreciate your time today. Your Twitter handle is, what, at @hey_Jude35, right, if I'm not mistaken?
That is correct.
And impeccable follow on Twitter, and impeccable teammate on Call of Duty. You rack up the wins, I must say. I mean, what, like, you're up to, like, what, almost 100 now? I mean, you are, like, every time I check the leaderboard, you already have, like, 3 more wins. It's incredible. Like, I'm up to, like, up to 45, and I've been kind of on a hot streak lately. And then I check you, you're more than doubling me, getting, like, a win every day. Like, it's crazy. You're on it, man. You're getting these wins.
Thank you. I needed my tires pumped, but I live and breathe that game right now. So it's for how much I play, I should be winning that much. But yeah, it's a good time. We have fun.
We sure do. All right, man. This is Jude Held, the man, the myth, the legend himself. We had Brian Engblom on the first half of the show. Jude, we appreciate your time, and I'll see you on the sticks out there real soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Andrew. Go Stars.
And this has been episode number 107 of Chell Square, number 108. Coming up next week, I'll talk to you then.